You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Break a Bat podcast, where baseball meets Broadway. An attempt to show that my two favorite mediums don't have to live in such separate worlds and maybe even break some stigmas. We're happy to have you with us. Now let's play ball. Hello and welcome to another edition of Break a Bat, where baseball meets Broadway. I'm your host, Al Malafronte, coming at you for the Broadway Podcast Network. Tonight, we're actually going to be joined by the very first Tony winner we've ever had on the program. And since our special guest has, in fact, won two Tony Awards, this is almost like talking to a Frank Robinson or Ernie Banks, if you want to draw a little baseball parallel in the Broadway world. My guest tonight began his career on Broadway all the way back in 1997 when he made his Broadway debut in Rent. He's since gone on to originate roles in some of my favorite productions of all time. You know how much I love The Last 5 Years, Wicked, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, Catch Me If You Can, Big Fish. The list goes on and on. In addition to everything he's accomplished on stage and screen, he's also one of the biggest baseball fans on Broadway. Having grown up in St. Louis, he's one of the most passionate Cardinals fans that you're going to find in New York. And I'm so stoked to talk some baseball and Broadway with him tonight as he shows me his Cardinals swag. So with that being said, I'll ask you all to please turn your attention to home plate. Just beyond the marquee, now batting, Norbert Leo Butts. Norbert, welcome.
Thanks, Al. That was a lot of metaphors you got in there, man. That was impressive.
I hope you took the Ernie Banks call as a compliment. I know he was a Cub, but he's a Hall of Famer, right?
That's a little over the top. My favorite Cardinal of all time, though, is Ozzie Smith. Although I was a big Keith Hernandez fan, too. So Ozzie Smith, always my favorite Cardinal.
God, you're bringing me... I did not catch...
I see that. I'm old, so like, you know, I'm going back to that incredible club in the 80s and the early 90s, you know what I mean?
Yeah, the Whitey Herzog teams, the best.
Exactly.
You know what amazes me about those teams is that that core group was intact for most of the late 80s. They went to three different Game 7s. I think had Don Denkinger not screwed up in 85, you might be talking about one of the best baseball dynasties of the modern era. Would you agree with that?
Of course I would. And to be a kid at that time, I mean, so I graduated from high school in 1986. So we won the series 85, 87. We won again. I beat the Royals. Royals beat the Cardinals. We had, like you said, we had three World Series in that time with that team. And, you know, to be 14, 15, 16 years old when all that was going on and really fall in love with the sport was amazing. That was amazing. So I kind of like you, that was the same time I was really falling in love with acting and music. So I had those heroes, but then I had, you know, Keith Hernandez and Ozzie Smith and that incredible lineup there, man. Incredible guys.
I mean, it amazed me. Willie McGee was another guy.
Yes.
Like, oh my gosh. And Bruce Sutter, Hall of Fame closer. It was like, it was just such like, all those names are so recognizable. But, I mean, but none more so than Ozzie Smith, obviously. I wish I saw him.
And the credit has to be also given to Whitey Herzog. You know, there are legendary coaches, you know, who are kind of mythical, you know, and he's one of them. Even the name, you know, it's such a great baseball manager name, you know, with that white cropped hair. And what a leader he was. I was listening. Cardinals are not having the greatest June so far. Our team is struggling right now. And I was listening to a Cardinals podcast that I listened to earlier in the day. And, you know, the blame was coming to Schilt and the management and all that kind of stuff. And you really remember in baseball how much. Like the CEO of any company or the president, how much the blame is laid at the feet of the management and the coaching staff. It just reminds me of the pressure of that position. And a guy like, you know, you get your guys like Whitey Herzog that could handle that pressure and keep all that grace and guts. It was such a great time, yeah.
I hope, you've done a lot of great things on Broadway. Have you worked for many directors who haven't been able to do that, so to speak, to keep that grace among the cast?
Oh, sure. Of course. I've worked with lousy directors and had, but not just in my field, you know, leadership in general is, you know, that's what a great director is. And, you know, it's a gift when people have those leadership skills. I've mostly worked with amazing directors and incredible teachers. But yeah, there's bad apples everywhere.
Were you a Tony La Russa guy?
Of course. I mean, are you asking like personally or as a manager?
Not his driving record, but just as far as did you like his style of managing? And, you know, the fact that he's still involved in baseball today kind of amazes me a little bit because I you know, we've seen already he's all of 2.5 months into his tenure with the White Sox after being right out of the game for so long and having these communication issues with his players. I wasn't sure if, I mean, he was the manager for McGuire and Pujols, Jim Edmonds, all those guys, much more of an old school breed. But right, I feel like the off the field stuff for a lot of Cardinals fans has kind of tainted his legacy a little bit. So I wasn't sure how you sort of viewed him.
I mean, I don't want to opine on anything personal about him. All I can say is the White Sox just smoked the Cardinals. And so, you know, he's still coaching good ball, you know? So you have to give somebody just the, like you said, the length of the career is, it's brutal, right? Professional sports of any kind, anything at that level, the pressure, you know? So for these guys who last that long, I think props got to be given, you know, definitely in my field.
Yeah, I can imagine. Were you playing ball before you started acting? I feel like for guys like us, you kind of go from the field, you know, little league or, you know, junior high ball to the stage. Is that how it worked for you?
I played everything growing up and was not good at anything necessarily. I was fast. So I went to Catholic education all the way through, right? So from St. Louis, Missouri, and at our school was small. It was a small local parochial school right in the city of St. Louis. I was in a class of maybe 20 kids, maybe like 9 guys. And so, you know, we had a baseball program, whatever, the Catholic youth baseball, soccer, basketball. Those were the 3 sports. You had to play. If all 9 or 10 kids didn't play, you couldn't have a team, depending, you know. So I played everything from first grade all the way up to 8th grade. Soccer is what if I had any ability as an athlete, it was really as a soccer player. And I played that through middle school and a year in high school. And I was fast, but I was a lousy baseball player. I was afraid of the ball. I was terrible. And like I said, it wasn't until as an adult, really, that the strategic parts of the game and the mental parts of the game and how subtle and sophisticated it all is, none of that was all lost on me as a kid, in terms of playing it. But yes, I did play growing up. Yeah. And I had, you know, I'm one of 11 kids, you know, no halves, no steps. One mom, one dad, you know, all 11 were theirs. I have 7 brothers. So we were our own team. I mean, basically, you know, in the alley behind our house, we had stick ball games that would last for hours or whatever your street ball was. That's really mostly what we did. And I was always I'm the 7th kid in my family. So I have older brothers, several of them great athletes. I couldn't even compete. I was the shortest, the smallest. You know, I got my butt kicked playing sports with my brothers. But I guess it made me have a thick skin, which is good for the profession that I chose, I guess.
Oh, absolutely. Now, were any of your older siblings into the acting or the drama clubs in school? Is that kind of how you got hooked on it, or was it from something else?
Yeah, it's kind of a combination of things. So I would say first it was music. My family is really musical, you know, big Catholic family. We didn't have a lot of money. It was a piano in the living room, and everybody just sort of gravitated to it. My parents were really religious. My dad, a super strict Catholic. My mom, actually, a super strict evangelical. So we had to go to mass with my dad, and then we'd still go to like Wednesday night church and prayer meetings with my mom. So it was like all church all the time. And so we all learned how to sing, you know, so all the hymns in the choirs. It's the first place I heard harmony, you know, is the first. And my oldest brother played guitar in the church band, and we all learned a few chords. And then the next brother, my grandparents are from Germany. My next brother started playing the accordion, and then we all grew, you know, so we had an accordion, a guitar, a piano went around the house. And so it was really music and singing first. But then, I had two brothers older than me who were in their school musicals. And I thought that was just the coolest thing. So my oldest brother is 10 years older than me. So I'd be like 7 or 8 years old and going to see the high school shows. And just being, you know, we're talking like Midwest Catholic high school production of like The King and I. Like right now, it would have been so canceled so quickly. Like brown makeup, you know, painted on Asian eyes. This is like this late 70s, early 80s. You know, spray paint in the hair to cover all the blood. But that whole idea, that the kids from my neighborhood and, you know, my babysitter or the guy from church, they're all like so exotic looking. It was definitely a huge inspiration to me. And just that whole idea that I could transform myself and be somebody else besides this sort of like, you know, sort of very provincial kind of Catholic kid in this family, you know, I could distinguish myself in some way or even escape a little bit. You know, like I said, it was a big family and a noisy, and we didn't have, you know, a lot of the creature comforts. And so it was a place for me to kind of, I think my imagination started to really take off. And so maybe that's why I didn't continue to be as interested in sports, especially soccer, which I really did love. Was because the acting and the music, the imagination, the sports didn't do that to my mind. But they must have rubbed off somewhere because people have described me as a very physical sort of actor. And it doesn't, you know, and I think musicals is what I gravitated to because of the kinetic energy and athleticism, really, that it takes to do a Broadway musical. Susan Stroman actually said that of Nathan Lane and Matthew Broderick when they were doing The Producers, you know, she called them great athletes of the theater. And that's really what they are. That's really what we do. And I have always felt a kinship with professional athletes in that way. It's much closer to what an 8-show schedule is. A week on Broadway, you know, the body maintenance, the injuries, the constant, the micromanaging of diet and exercise and limbering up, all of those things. And we were talking about the Cardinals here. I know I'm going off, but we have been so plagued by injuries, right? That's our problem this year, right? We've got all these guys benched and, you know this as well as I. The strength of your club, it's completely related to the health of your players. The same is true of a Broadway show, especially in the long-term maintenance of that show. You have shows where people start to get hurt left and right, you know, injuries happening. Sometimes it's because you're on a raked stage. Sometimes it's because the choreography is wrong. It's too difficult to do 8 times a week. And so there are a lot of similarities between a Broadway performer and a professional athlete.
Now, you're doing what you love, but be real with me for a second. I mean, you talk about the toll it takes on your body, all the maintenance you have to do to stay in shape, especially depending on the role you're taking on. Does life suck once you leave the theater? Like, outside of, like, your family and friends, like, all the little stuff in between, though, does it just, like, do you hate it? Like, do you hate that part of it?
Do you mean like returning to real life, like
returning to real life, but the real life is, you know, you're putting yourself into a frame of mind where, oh shoot, I want to have two slices of pizza after the show, but I can't because I got to be able to make sure I fit into my costume. Like, do you hate that part of it, or does the reward you get on stage make up for it?
I mean, hate is a strong word. It is a challenge. I hear what you're saying now. I think what you're saying is something that is a huge challenge when you're doing a Broadway show. You sign up for or even a play. It really does ask all of you, all of your concentration, all of your physical strength, all of your imagination, all of your heart, your whole soul. And so, yes, you have to monitor yourself all week long. It's this kind of highly disciplined state of living, which I find very challenging. And it's not germane to me. I don't do that instinctually. I'm kind of a very instinctual person. If I want to eat this, I eat it. If I don't, but you're absolutely right. You know, you start preparing for the show that night from the minute you wake up. It's really true. I've been doing it a long time. And so you learn how to keep a few plates in the air. I can still do my life and take care of my kids and, you know, do the errands and walk the dogs and be a husband and be a dad. But always at, you know, not far from the frontal cortex is that show that's coming up in a few hours. So right upon waking, you test out the voice. You see what's left from last night and you start from there. You feel your body, you get out, you do a couple of stretches. And you go about your day, but there's no mistaking that you are taking almost like taking data on your physical apparatus all day long. And you just learn how to synthesize that. But yeah, man, it can be a drag sometimes. It's mostly a drag. I think what you're asking about is when it infringes on your personal life, like not being able to make weddings or not being able to do, you know what I mean? Family things. There are certain personal days you can get, but you sign that contract just like a baseball player. Do you know what I'm saying? They don't get to miss, you know, a doubleheader with the Cubs because someone's daughter is graduating from kindergarten. Do you know what I mean? It just doesn't work like that. And yeah, sometimes you can go, yeah, I wish I could do that. I wish I could have it all. But I do, for me, it was my calling. And so I've made peace with that, you know?
Yeah. Now you talk about not being able to miss things. I find this kind of cool. And I'm curious to hear if you and I think the same way on this front. You were originating your role in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels during the 06 season. The Cards went on to win that October. Yes, Catch Me If You Can, 2011. They won right during the heart of your run on that with that show.
Actually, I have to correct you. The Cardinals went to the World Series in 06, but they lost to Boston.
No, that was 04. 06, they beat Detroit.
Oh, Al, you are so right. In 04, I was doing the out-of-town Dirty Rotten Scoundrels with John Lithgow, who is a big Boston fan, and I'm a big Cardinals fan, and we would be on stage with a transistor radio.
How were you really?
And I think I was on stage when we lost that series. I was, yes, that I guess because I get my years mixed up. I remember that very well.
Well, what I was going to ask you was, like, for me, for example, I'll piece together different events I've had in my life to different chapters of Yankee baseball. Like, for example, Jeter's 3,000th hit. Oh, 21st birthday trip to California. Do you look back and say, like, oh, Pujols' 3-home run game in the World Series, Carl Hannerty?
Okay, now you're reminding me. So, 04 was Dirty Rotten Scoundrels with Lithgow. 06, during that World Series, I definitely remember where I was in the 6th game, which we needed to win because it went to 7 games, right?
Wait a second. Wait, am I? If I recall, 06 went to, that was a 5-game series, but 2011 was the 7-game series against Texas.
The 2011 series, final game, I'm on a movie set. I am shooting an intimate scene with an actress, and we have to pretend to have sex. And I only say this because that game was going on. And when it came time to shoot the scene, the actress started having a disagreement with the director. I can't remember if she had didn't sign a nudity clause or something. They were hammering this out. And I was like, please, please just make a decision. Because I had the phone under the bed while I'm in the bed with like a little thong on, right? The rest of me is in the buff. And I can't let them know that I'm listening to this game. That I remember, and I would never say who that actress was. And I just remembered, the actress was saying, but I don't want to show that. And I just said, you know what? I'll show everything because I just wanted to get the shot. So I was like, this game, it's so terrible. And that's what we did. I think you can see my ass in the shot. That was the quickest solution to the shot so I could get back to the game. That's terrible.
So now we're going to know who the actress is. If we hunt down your IMDb, check the years. Yeah,
if you need to do all that, then, you know.
You got bigger problems. You need to do all that.
Have at it.
Oh, man.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Hello. Now, you've been in New York a while now. I have to know, who's more passionate in your eyes, the Yankee and Met fans or the Cardinal fans?
Oh, well, just, you know, it's about size. I mean, my God, St. Louis is a small town compared to New York City. I'm always astonished at just how large just Brooklyn is, right? Just the borough of Brooklyn. St. Louis is like a little river town. But I think we give them a run. What we lack in, you know, numbers, we make up for in orneriness. No, I think Cardinals fans are really, really passionate, but Cardinals fans don't go the way of a lot of clubs, you know, that we don't have to mention, you know.
The Red Sox?
Yeah, you know, we don't have... you don't see players getting booed, you know, former players. People generally stay. I mean, there's, like I said, bad apples, but we're generally, it's a baseball loving town, truly loving the sport of baseball. We have great fans, though. Have you been to the ballpark in St. Louis? I call it the new ballpark because I'm still like in Busch Stadium, you know, in my mind, that's how old I am. But it really is beautiful. They did a gorgeous job with it.
They have. I know. I remember when the old one was closing in 05. So the Yankees were facing the Cardinals for the first time in St. Louis because of interleague play was still all of what, 7, 8 years old at that point. I remember they had Joe Torre. They would reduce the number for how many home games. were left. And I remember, you know, you remember Joe Torre, of course, great Cardinals player. Then he managed the team. They had him, you know, pull the lever down. The old one had so much character. But what I like about that ballpark is the new one anyway, they've been able to not make it a carbon copy, but it really is inspired out of the old one. Whereas a lot of the new ballparks, I don't know if you can necessarily say that. I mean, there's very little character from the house that Ruth built at this new Yankee Stadium.
I agree. I agree. You said Joe Torre, and I had the pleasure of meeting. He's a Broadway fan, and he came to see Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. And I remember him coming backstage, and I'm not particularly nervous to meet famous actors, or we're all, you know, we know our own kind. I'm not really that impressed with sort of acting royalty, but sports royalty or music royalty, I sometimes get. And Joe Torre was there on the same night that Keith Hernandez was there. And I just loved Keith Hernandez. He has, you know, great comeback story, such a long career. I think he's had such a great post-baseball life. And I just remember they were the same night, and I was just overwhelmed. I was geeking out. It was pretty thrilling. But that's the beautiful thing, you know, New Yorkers. I mean, it's, you know, you're doing this Broadway and baseball thing. That's the beautiful thing about New York. You would never find that combination in St. Louis, right? You would be a sports fan, or you'd be into the arts. In New York, it's like, hey, man, Broadway, baseball, you know, it's New York. Do you know what I mean? It's all equally part of the identity of you guys. It's a very beautiful thing. Very cool.
Well, thanks. I'm glad you appreciate what we do. And, you know, it sounds like you kind of grew up the same way I did. The fact that you lived in a house that embraced the music, that embraced the arts, and your dad was still taking you to the ballpark. I mean, that's just like, what a beautiful gift as a kid, right?
Totally. My dad, the music coming in, that was all my mom's side of the family. My dad was the rabid sports fan. My dad actually was sold peanuts and cold Cokes at Old Busch Stadium, you know, when he was 12, 13, 14 years old. Those were his first jobs. And had season tickets as an old man. So he lived at that ballpark, and not just the St. Louis Cardinals, man. Everything, every sports team, and not even just our professional sports, our college sports. We went to hockey, that was a very special treat. My dad, like I said, he had 11 kids. Hockey is an elite sport in Missouri. Those tickets were always too expensive, way too dear for our working class family. But maybe once every couple of years on a birthday, you got to go to a hockey game. But, you know, the St. Louis football Cardinals, and then of course the Rams, you know, that was all part. But then even like my dad was into, like, we were an arts house, but we were really a sports house, man. The indoor soccer league, the St. Louis Steamers we had for a while. We have St. Louis University there, Mizzou football, Mizzou basketball, all of that stuff we went to. All of it. My dad was at a sporting event, I'm not kidding you, Al, 5 nights out of 7. It was my mom's side that was really musical. And and I think the arts bug was bit there. Yeah. So they were a good combination, my parents, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, Norbert, I'm a fan of yours, and I'm sure you've been asked this before, but I've never heard the answer. Out of all the stuff you've done on Broadway, what is your favorite role? Because, I mean, I've seen you I saw you in the OBC of Wicked when we went on a middle school field trip to see it in 2004. Catch Me If You Can, one of my favorite shows. I've talked about on this podcast before how much I loved The Last 5 Years, which I know technically wasn't on Broadway, but like with all the cool stuff that you've gotten to done, do you ever sit around and rank them and, you know, pick a favorite?
I don't really. Your favorite one is whatever you're doing at the time. I'm actually wary of looking back too much and spending too much time going, oh yeah, that show, like pondering about the career. Cause I'm all about like moving velocity, like moving forward. But I'm grateful for every job I've had. It's a hard business to stay employed. It's a hard business to stay, you know, actively employed and to make a living at this. So I'm super lucky that I've gotten to do it as long as I have. Certain shows were really heartbreaking because they closed too early, you know. Other shows you love, but they're really successful, and then you get like super burned out because you've been doing it for a year. So it's they're all, don't make me pick between my children, you know. Don't make me pick.
That's fair. You know what? Not that I've been in any Broadway cast or that I've played on any Yankee teams, but if people ask me my favorite show to see, favorite show that I have seen, there's different answers depending on how fondly, I guess, I'm looking back on that chapter in my life. And the same with the Yankee teams as well. Like, you know, there were certain things about 1999 that was special because I was 9 years old and watching with my dad. And then there's certain things that were special about 2009 because mm-hmm. I was in college in a different chapter of my life and, you know, kind of becoming a man at that point. So it's, yeah, not that I consider any of the Yankee World Series teams to be my children, but it's the experiences that go along with them that just makes everything so unique and have such a unique identity. So I totally get why you put it that way.
And you know, there are some jobs that, you know, great shows, great projects, but like maybe something was going on that year personally that was super hard for you. So it's like, oh, my life really sucked at that time. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So associated with that is this show, and it wasn't the show's fault, you know, it's just your job. But but I'm super grateful for all of them, man.
Yeah, well, you've certainly done some good ones and you've accomplished a lot, Norbert, but now it's about to get a little bit tough here on Break a Bat, because we do this little segment to wrap every show called Fastball Derby.
Oh geez.
Yeah, man, I want you to picture yourself in the batter's box. Ninth inning, game's on the line. You got to think quick because Aroldis Chapman is on the mound throwing 105 miles an hour. So you got to put your best swing out there. You're also a great storyteller, so don't feel like you have to be rapid.
I hope I can swing better than my guys have been swinging the last couple of weeks. Holy crap, man. We are just not hitting that ball. Ugh.
We got to get Goldie going. Arenado started to come alive a little bit compared to the beginning of the season. But I think that you're going to swing a better power bat than those guys for this segment.
But you know, we don't have the Cardinals are an interesting team, right? Because we've had these eras with that monster hitter, you know, a Pujols, you know, or McGuire, although that's a whole other story. You know, we don't have that. We've always I love Cardinals baseball because we've been lacking those bigger funds. You know what I mean? We've been a full team. Do you know what I mean? We chip away at it, you know, one at bat at a time. Lots of singles and lots of doubles can still bring in a lot of runs. Do you know what I mean? You don't need to all the home runs, but we're not hitting that ball right now. So hopefully that's going to change. All right, let me have them.
All right, batter up. Favorite New York City meal?
Okay. I'm going to say a steak. I'm going to say a steak at that place down the street from Wicked. It was so good. Is it Gallagher? Wait, no.
There is a Gallagher steakhouse that I don't... Now, the Gershwin, I'm trying to think, is on... Is Gershwin on 51st?
Yeah.
Gershwin's on 51st. I don't remember if it's on... Is it right by Ruth's Chris? Because there's like... I think Gallagher's, for some reason, is right by Ruth's Chris, which might be in the 40s, but I could be wrong about that. But do you like a New York City steak, though?
Yeah, that was a great meal. Yeah. I just remember that steak. I was going to say my favorite meal was this restaurant called Sosa Barella, which used to be on 9th, and it was Argentinian. It was also amazing Argentinian beef. They still might have their downtown location. But yeah, a good steak. That was a weak swing. Give me another one.
Greatest Cardinals game you've ever been to.
Oh my gosh. I can't think of a specific specific one, but I would have to say I did go to, I guess I went to the second game of our series in 87 that we ended up losing to the Royals. And that's the only, I just say that because it's the only World Series game I've ever been to, and to be a part, even though we lost the night that I went, was astonishing. I've never felt that energy before or since. Yeah. 87 World Series. Yeah.
Wow. Actor or actress you learned the most from?
God, that's so hard. I'll say John Lithgow.
It's a great choice.
Yeah. I learned a shit ton from him. Not just about acting and about being in the theater, but just about being in a person, just a great human, a great friend. I really consider him a mentor in a lot of ways. How he lives his life is really exemplary. I love John, and he's freaking hilarious.
He sure is. Person in the audience you were most nervous or intimidated to perform in front of?
Oh, God, that's easy. Bruce Springsteen. God.
What'd he come see? Was he a Wicked guy, or was he a Catch Me If You Can guy? Where was he
No.
coming to?
So my Springsteen story, I actually told this on another podcast not that long ago, but yeah, I'm a huge Springsteen fan. I grew up as a kid, you know, I was doing classical music as a kid, studying piano and voice. And then my high school girlfriend got me super into old Bruce Springsteen, and I've never looked back. And I switched from piano to guitar because of him, and I started writing songs, and I'm a huge fan. And when I have a very strict policy when I'm in a show. I do not like to know who's coming. Some people love it. I don't. It makes me nervous. It makes me self-conscious. I like it to not distinguish a show in any way. Like, oh, this one's got to be extra. I do much better if I just, you know, every show is just like another game that I'm just trying to do my absolute best for. But in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, there's a moment where my character had to do this quick change on stage, and then like a wall of guys kind of covered me up. And one of the guys in the ensemble said, "Did you see that? Springsteen's in the fourth row. Did you see Springsteen?" I was like, fuck, don't, you know? And that was at the top of the first act. So the whole show, sure enough, I can see him. He's right on the aisle. And that show was a lot of mucking with the audience and improv, and we're looking out to that, you know, I could see him and his wife and their three kids, and he was cracking up. So that kind of emboldened me. And then after the show, the stage manager knocks on the door and says, Bruce Springsteen is here. He's in John's dressing room. He'd like to say hello. And I said, I was getting out of the shower, and I was just froze. I remember I downed a beer really quick. I no longer drink, but I used to drink right after my shows. So I like chugged two beers to just get up some courage. And I went and I went into John's dressing room, and I met him, and he was like super gracious, almost shy, you know, and just super complimentary. And his wife was lovely, and his kids were super sweet. And then I did this weird thing. I was like, and I thanked him. I said, "Mr. Springsteen, I just, you know, your music and your writing and your voice has changed my life." He's like, "Oh, thanks, man. Thanks." He was so nice. And I got in my car and I start driving home like it's any other night. And I start to cry. And I just wept like for the longest time. And I thought about that moment so many times. Like, I don't know if I've ever cried so hard in my life. And it was this weird moment where I think when we're a kid, especially if like I was kind of an outsider kid, I was kind of lonely. I really escaped into music, you know. And you create your icons in your head. They turn into gods to you. Do you know what I mean? Like larger than life. Like my imagination couldn't comprehend a Springsteen. Like he was an actual human being, you know. And so when I met him, in some ways it was like, it destroyed that, like, he became a man, he became a person. And then I just thought, who am I to have gotten someplace in my life to where Bruce Springsteen would ask to meet me? I don't know. It was this strange shift in my mind of reality. I can't really describe it, but it really shook me. And so after that, I was like, now I no longer meet. If there's people that I really am intimidated by, I run in the other direction. I'm just too overwhelmed by, and I'm not like that with a lot of people, just a few, but Springsteen was definitely one.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's unreal. That's an epic story. Thank you for sharing it. I know you've mentioned,
It was a really seminal moment in my adult life. As silly as that sounds, that's how deeply I identified with the myth of him and what he was creating through his songs. And so it was a really cool moment, though. Yeah. And now we're besties. Yeah, I'm meeting him to play pool and have a couple of beers. I'm only kidding.
Stone Pony, right? That's the spot I've heard in Asbury Park. All right, now how about this one? This is a tough one. Proudest moment of your career. Not asking you to pick between your favorite children, but what's the proudest moment of your career?
Proudest moment of my career. I'm really proud of, this is kind of heavy, but it's just the truth. When I was doing Catch Me If You Can, in Seattle in 2009, my younger sister was killed very suddenly the night before our first preview. She actually lived in Seattle. She was like my best friend in the world, and she was taken really violently. And we had to postpone the show by a few days. And my parents flew out, and we flew her body back to Missouri, and we buried her, and then I went straight back to Seattle, and we opened the show. We opened Catch Me If You Can just 4 days after her murder. And it was, I look back, and it's some part of me thinks that it was, maybe I look back and I should have maybe waited longer, but I'm so proud. I don't know if I'm proud of myself. I'm so proud of my company, of the company of that musical, of Catch Me If You Can. You know, I was in my world was really shattered with that event, you know, and they just picked me up and carried me through that performance for the whole run. So I did a 5-week run, you know, just taking 4 days off. And I was so grateful to have a job that to put my energy into something useful, you know, you just feel so out of control. But that company just surrounded me with love and supported me. And you know, I'd get upset and I couldn't get on stage, and they just would just literally kind of hold me up and kind of shepherd me through. And they did that all through that run. And then we moved to Broadway, and they continued to just really support me and my whole family. It was the first time, I guess, I was so proud to be an actor and to be part of, you know, community is really everything that we do. You know what I mean? Our cast, they become our families. I was telling you earlier, you give up a lot, you know, in terms of time with your family, but the beauty of what I do is the families that we make. It's like a team, just like a great team. Do you know what I mean? When all the players are right, a cast is like that too. And I'm so lucky that's, do you know what I mean? Like that's my people at work are such beautiful people, and actors really are, man. We're neurotic, and we're a lot to handle, but we have big hearts. And my friends who are actors, you know, most all of them have huge hearts, and so they saved my ass during that process and got me through it, you know. So that's probably my proudest moment. As sad as it sounds to talk about it, that was just the first thing that came to my head. That was like the hardest thing I ever had to do. And the fact that those people allowed, gave me the space to do it, I'm super proud of that. And you know, it's a long time ago now, it's 11 years ago. And so I can have that perspective on it and know how freaking lucky I am.
Yeah, well, you know what? We're pretty lucky as the Broadway community to have people like you in it, Norbert. Seriously, man. I mean, you're such an inspiration to so many people for what you do on the stage and, you know, the way you carry yourself off of it. There's a lot to be said for that, man. And I would like you even if you didn't like baseball.
But let's face it, it's better if you like baseball.
Yeah, totally.
It's just so fun. Well, you know what? Now, since we have Interleague, some of my favorite Cardinals games have been at Yankee Stadium. You know, it's been so great to have them up a couple of times a year now, you know, for series with the Mets and the Yanks. So it's, I can see them right here in my backyard. Yeah, all right. Well, we'll meet there at the park one of these days in person. And
absolutely.
I'll be the guy in red.
Hey, listen, you know what? People say, oh, there's a Yankee way of doing things. There's a Cardinal way of doing things. And like you said, it's a great fan base. And yeah, you're certainly a great part of that one. And I'm so grateful I got to chat with you tonight, my man. Thanks.
You too, Al. It was so much fun, man.
Absolute blast. And thank you to all the folks at home who listened to Break a Bat tonight. I hope you subscribe and follow us wherever you get your podcasts. This is Al Malafronte signing off for the Broadway Podcast Network. We'll see you next time.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.